This Truma continues the discussion of the Aron with the discussion of the Kaporis, which effectively was the cover for the Aron, but a very special cover for that. And then surprisingly, the Torah does not continue on with the discussion of the Menorah, which is so deeply connected to the Aron, but rather the Torah continues on with the discussion of the Shulchan. So I'd like to discuss aspects of the crew of the Kaporis, which was the lid of the Aron, as well as the Shulchan, today. So the Kaporis, again, was structured to fit directly on top of the Aron. It would go on top of the Aron after the Luchos and the Shemurei Luchos, for that matter, had been placed inside the Aron. And the Kaporis, again, had the Kruvim coming naturally out of it. So we have, of course, the lid and the Kruvim coming up in each direction, ufnehem ish el achiv. They were cherubs, of course, is the English translation of kruvim, for lack of a better term. Rashi says they had a partsuf of yeladim, they had a childlike faces, so much artistic representation of this. But for purposes, for our section this morning, the most important aspect of the kaporas and the kruvim is that it's described by the Torah as miksha. That is to say, one solid piece of gold. The kruvim emerge naturally out of the kaporis, which of course is the lid for the aron that we talked about yesterday. And it has to be made not of separate pieces that are fastened together, but of one organic, holistic piece that you would then hammer out. And as we know, the kruvim, as discussed in the Gemara, represent the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. There's even a line in the Gemara, one opinion, that when it says here in the Chumash, Ufenehem Yishal Achiv, that they faced each other, that was only Bizman She'osin Ritzono Shamakom, when we were following the will of Hashem. Bizman She'enanu Osin Ritzono Shamakom, if we were not following the will of Hashem, then the Kruvim would turn around. That's not the only opinion in the Gemara. The one other opinion in the Gemara is that they were sort of tilted or looking at a diagonal, but be that as it may, if the Kruvim represent the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, it's very important to think about how this relates to the notion of miksha. Miksha, again, meaning that it's one solid block of gold, not hammered or nailed together. Does anybody have a thought about that? Why would it need to be miksha? Why would the Kruvim, there are only three elements in the Torah that are miksha, the menorah, we'll discuss tomorrow, is miksha. We'll get into that. Again, that it's only one holistic piece. It's not different pieces of gold connected to each other. And then the chatzotzos are miksha, and maybe we'll discuss that tomorrow as well. But be that as it may, why would it be that the kaporis is miksha? And bear in mind that from the perspective of Chazal, the kruvim represented the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. Anybody have any suggestions they want to make? Avishai, maybe a thought about this? Why would it be that the kaporis and the kruvim have to be a miksha, one holistic, solid piece, if it is indeed symbolic of the relationship between God and the Jewish people?
Maybe because it's representing how, we look at God as just one, not like many gods, like there's one.
Okay, very good. So maybe if it's our conception of God, it's a very good idea. So then it actually, should highlight the fundamental principle of Yichud Hashem. But remember, Hashem isn't the only representation of the Kruvim, because there are two of them. One of them relates to the Jewish people. So it's not so much a representation of Hashem, but a representation of Hashem and the Jewish people. In fact, in a certain sense, it can't be a representation of Hashem, because the Aseret HaDibro says, Lo sas l'cha fesel kol t'muna asher b'shamayim mimal v'asher b'aretz mitachad. We can't make any physical representations of God. But I thought that was a creative suggestion. Freddie?
In our relationship with Hashem, we shouldn't try to take the easy way out. We should go the hardest and most sincere way.
Okay, very good. So what I want to try to do is build a little bit off what Freddie said, and to say that the relationship between God and the Jewish people is not best conceived as a relationship between two different entities, A and B, Reuven and Shimon, Pakistan and India, Japan and Korea. The relationship between Hashem and Jewish people is that we are inextricably linked to Hashem. We cannot be separated. God is tied into the Jewish people, Kishimcha Nikra Banu, and we are tied into Hashem as His Am Sigula and Mamlachas Konim. So again, the structural details of the Mishkan really do seem to represent, in a very profound way, foundational ideas of Jewish philosophy, So if the relationship between God and the Jewish people is inextricably linked, it makes a great deal of sense for the physical representation of that to actually be miksha, one solid piece of gold. Now, the Torah says, "Nolati l'chasham v'dibarti t'cha me'al ha-kaporos v'bein shnei akruvim," which meant that Moshe Rabbeinu would enter the Ohel Moed. This is the Kodesh Kadashim right over here, where you had only the Aron. And over here, as we'll speak about today, you had the Mizbeach HaKetores, that we won't speak about in detail today, and you had the Menorah, and then you had the Shulchan. So Moshe Rabbeinu would enter the Ohel Moed, and he would hear the voice of Hashem as if it was coming, Mibein Shnei HaKruvim. So our relationship with God isn't just physically represented by the Kruvim, but our relationship with God, you know, insofar as Moshe was communicating that relationship, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Daber el b'nei Yisrael. So where did Moshe hear God's voice from? Right on top of the Kruvim. But what's interesting, right on top of the Kaporos, I should say, right here, the Kruvim emerged from there. What's interesting is the way that the Torah formulates it. V'nu'ati l'chasham v'dibarticha me'al ha-kaporos mi'bein shnei ha-kruvim. So Hashem says, I will commune with you there. And then the Torah says, and Rashi's not sure exactly why the Torah puts it this way, v'natata el haron eis ha-edus asher etenei lecha. The Torah seems to remind us at this point that either before you put the kaporis on, okay, that you should put the Torah, you should put the luchos into the aron, and then you have the kaporis. So what I'd like to suggest is the following. Why is it that Hashem's voice, kaviyachol, was heard from over here? Was heard from right on top of the kaporis, and let's not forget that the luchos are inside. So it seems to me that, and once again, the Torah is emphasizing the following. Our relationship with Hashem, God speaking to Moshe to speak to us, is contingent, is predicated, depends exclusively on, it rests on the foundation of the Luchos. So it makes a great deal of sense, in fact, for the Torah to come back and emphasize the point that, yeah, this is where you're going to hear my voice from, but don't forget that you're only entitled to hear my voice if you're adhering to the Torah itself. And in fact, that's exactly what the Medrash says. The 38 years the Jewish people were wandering in the desert because we were punished for Chenam Raglim, Moshe did not receive the Dibur from Hashem. This is a privilege. So we don't just get to hear God's voice. We get to hear God's voice through Moshe when we're complying with the Torah. The foundation of everything that the Mishkan represents, we talked about yesterday, v'shachanti v'socham, that God is going to dwell within the Jewish people, both collectively and individually, is predicated on our adherence to the Torah. There is no relationship with God. There is no v'nu'ati l'chasham v'dibarati l'cha me'al ha-kubrim. That doesn't exist unless we have the foundation of the Torah. V'haraya, and the proof is that Moshe did not merit speaking to God at all during the years when the Jewish people were, so to speak, in nidui, in excommunication, as Chazal expressed it, for the Chet HaMeraglim. Okay, so let's hold. So the Shulchan is the next kli discussed, and it's a little bit surprising in the sense that the Shulchan really isn't as deeply related to the Aron, as we'll see tomorrow, as the Menorah is. You would have expected Torah to go from the Aron to the Kaporis, as it does, which is the lid to the Aron, and the Kruvim to the Menorah. And the Menorah, in many ways, is a representation of the Aron outside of the Kodesh Kadashim, because the Aron is hidden away. So why the Shulchan? So the Shulchan, of course, hosted the entire week long, and new ones went down on Shabbos, the Lechem HaPanim. The Shulchan represented the Lechem HaPanim. And the Lechem HaPanim was, of course, the bread that only the Kohanim were allowed to eat. Okay, and it represented the idea of sustaining the fact that the relationship with Hashem also provided physical sustenance for the Jewish people. In fact, the Shulchan is associated, if the Aron is associated with the Keser Torah, the Shulchan is associated with the Keser Malchus. And one of the responsibilities of the Melech was to ensure for the physical welfare of the Jewish people, the nurturing of the Jewish people, the physical nourishing of the Jewish people. So the Shulchan represents that. So I'd like to suggest, again, just a thought, why should it be that instead of going from what you would expect, the Aron to the menorah, because the menorah again represents Kiner Mitzvah V'Torah Or, why is the Shulchan interrupting in between? So again, was that Aron? Well, it represents the leadership of the Jewish people, the Malchus. So what I'd like to suggest is the possibility that this is the Torah way of hinting to us that ein kemach, ein Torah. That you can't just have a presentation where you go from the Aron, which represents the Torah, to the Kaporis, and the Kruvim, and the Menorah. Yeah, it's true, ein Torah, ein kemach, but stuck right there in between is the Shulchan, because the Shulchan hosts the Lechem, the actual bread, the physical sustenance that the Gohanim would eat every single Shabbos, the Kodshei Kadoshim. Okay. That is an aspect of Kodshei Kadoshim. It can only be eaten by a Kohen. The only non-Kohen to ever eat the Lechem Apanim, arguably, was David HaMelech when he was starving to death, when he was running from Shaul and Sefer Shmuel. And Shaul decides to wipe out the entire city of Nov, the city of the Kohanim, on that basis. Okay, because at that point he was quite paranoid. But be that as it may, if the Shulchan represents the Keser Malchus, and the Melech is responsible for providing for the physical needs of the Jewish people, amongst other things, and again, you have the connection to the Lechem HaPanim, which has to be on the Shulchan Tami. There always has to be bread, which is positioned on the Shulchan. Perhaps this is an expression of the idea of Ein Kemach, Ein Torah.